You're listening to episode 345 of the Building Psychological Strength podcast. I'm your host, Dr. April Seifert. On this podcast, we uncover the information, tools, and techniques to turn our mind into our most valuable asset. Hello, friends, and welcome back to this episode of the Building Psych Strength podcast. I'm Dr. April, and I'm so thrilled that you're here with me. You know, it's been a few weeks since we've had a one-on-one episode where it's just been me and you talking about a topic that pertains to our lives and really digging deep into the psychology underneath it. Now, this week's episode is a fun one because something that I've noticed is that one of the most popular classes in undergraduate education is Intro to Psychology. Tons of people take it. Dare I say everyone takes it. And we're going to be talking about two concepts today that you, if you've taken an Intro to Psychology class or if you've even followed the field of psychology, even just casually on social media, you've probably heard about these two concepts. Now, what's interesting about psychology is it's very, very easy to hear about these concepts, but not actually make the leap into applying them to your own life. And there's a lot of reasons why. I mean, one of them is totally our fault as a field. We tend to write in a way that is completely inaccessible. It just makes things very difficult to understand at the level of nuance that you would need to understand them in order to make that leap and apply it to your life. But the other part of it is that a lot of the concepts we talk about are so broadly applicable that it almost, because they can be applied so broadly, it makes it difficult to apply them to a specific context. So today we're going to be talking about two concepts and specifically how they apply to something that a lot of you have probably experienced. Let me set this up really quick. Many of you who listen to this show, I know because you guys contact me and the questions that you ask tell me that this is the case for you. Many of you have kids. Many of you are parents. And it's funny because you have kids and you think through a lot of, you know, what is to come as you're gearing up to, you know, bring kids into your family, however it is that that happens. And you think you've thought of everything. And then these sneaky things creep up on you. And today we're going to be diving deep into one of those things, which is parental guilt. Now, sometimes people call this mom guilt, but I don't like that term because this is something that can apply to everybody. I mean, if you are a human being with a mind and you have a kid, this has likely happened to you more than one time. And even if you're a listener or an audience member or a community member of ours who doesn't have kids, I would encourage you to listen to this episode because, again, the concepts that we're talking about are very widely applicable. We're going to be diving into one specific application of them, but if you don't have kids, I want you to think about them more broadly and how they would apply to your life with your specific circumstances. So I'm really excited to unpack these couple of concepts today within the context of parental guilt, because it's something that so many of us face. It causes a ton of unnecessary suffering, and it's something that a little bit of understanding and a little bit of clarity can really help with. All right, stick with me and we'll dive in. All right, friends. So I'm so excited that you're with me for this. You know, it's funny because this episode actually came to be because I was having a conversation with a good friend of mine about the topic of parental guilt. And you've probably experienced it, right? Like you have been with your kids for a bunch of days on end and they are crazy and they're fighting and they have a lot of needs and you probably haven't gotten a break for a while. You just want to shower or eat a meal in peace without having to rush through it or stop and be interrupted 100 times. And then the moment comes, you get a break. You get to walk away for a minute and about 30 seconds later, the guilt sets in. You start to miss them. You start to feel weird about being away from them. You start to wonder what you're missing out on. And on it goes, right? This is something that I relate to on such a deep level, even though, you know, I've been in this parenting game for, you know, 6.5 years now. And even though I'm very skilled and very knowledgeable about psychology, it still gets me. And so I was having this conversation with my friend, and something that really helped was that I was kind of trying to talk through my situation from the context of psychology, and it hit me. There are two concepts in psychology that apply to parental guilt that I don't hear anybody else talking about. So I want to cover them today. Again, these are topics you have probably heard already about already if you've taken an introductory psychology class, but we're going to dive in deeper today. We're going to talk about what they are, how they apply, and where they come from. And hopefully that clarity and that understanding can help you, I guess, take a little bit of weight off yourself when you're in this situation the next time. I know that it has already helped me. So we'll end this episode with just some things to keep in mind the next time this parental guilt creeps in, because we all know it's inevitable. All right, so let's dive into the first concept that is applicable to parental guilt. And this one's going to seem a bit left field. This one is the concept of your comfort zone. In this case, I want to rename comfort zone, and I want to call it your familiarity zone, because that's essentially what your comfort zone is. Let's talk some brain science for a second. One of the biggest jobs that your brain has, I'm going to call it your mind. We're going to go more specific. One of the biggest jobs your mind has, and by mind, I mean the part of your brain that you are aware of, the part of your brain that you are cognizant of or that you interact with. So this isn't the part of the brain that makes your heart beat. You don't have any access to that. This is the part of your mind that operates in your voice. This is that internal running monologue that we all have. This is the feelings, the ickiness or the elation or all the emotion that comes with a full human experience. This is that part of the mind. That part of the mind, one of its biggest goals is to just get you through the day without spending really as much energy as it can. It wants to be as lazy as it can and get you through the day alive. Now, something that is a fundamental principle of how your mind works is that in order for it to do that, your mind wants to be able to predict. It wants to be able to know what's going to come next, because when it does, it doesn't have to work so hard. It doesn't have to sift through all the nuance of a situation or all of the details that might be going on. And so your mind loves predictability because it can kind of let its guard down and take some rules of thumb or heuristics as its way of processing what you're going through. So I call this your familiarity zone because things that you're familiar with are things that you have repeatedly done, situations you have repeatedly been in, situations not only that you have repeatedly been in, but your behavior has been repeated over and over in the same way in those situations. So this is where it gets fun, right? Like, you've probably heard about your comfort zone, your familiarity zone. You've probably heard about the fact that you step outside of that and your mind doesn't like it and it gets icky and kind of weird. How the heck does this apply to parental guilt? This one is particularly applicable if you are the parent who tends to do a particular activity or take on a particular responsibility more than the other parent. So even if you divide parental labor 50-50, there's probably things that, you know, I tend to do bath more often, or I tend to, you know, do dinner more often, or I take the kids to school or pick them up more often. When you deviate from that pattern, your mind doesn't like it. You're in a situation that's familiar, and all of a sudden, you are acting in a non-familiar way, an unfamiliar way. You've stepped out of your familiarity zone, and your mind doesn't like it. because it's saying, whoa, 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 you're usually the one who does this. What are you doing? I have to work hard now. I don't like that. I don't like that I wasn't able to predict what's going to happen. I don't like that you are behaving in a way that I'm not used to, because now I have to work hard. You are violating rule number one, get you through the day without having to work hard. So when you think about your mind, again, we're going to go back to some generalities and some concepts here. When you step out of your familiarity zone, your mind kind of has one trick that it falls back on in order to get you to fall back in line. You know what that is? It sends you something that my partner in Peak Mind, Dr. Ashley, likes to call the ick. It sends you the ick. So if you do something that is outside of the ordinary, your mind tends to send you negative emotions, anxiety, guilt, nervousness, frustration, envy. It tends to send you negative emotion. And what that is a signal to make you think something is wrong so you fall back in line. Now apply that. I feel like we're narrowing the gap here, right? And making it a bit easier to apply to a parenting situation. Let's say you are always the one who picks your kids up from school and gets dinner going. Until one day you have something for work or you're kind of burnt out or whatever, and your partner decides to pick that up. Or maybe you have a parent step in, or you get a nanny or a caretaker, or someone else does it, right? It's not you. You've stepped outside of your familiarity zone and you might feel that pang of guilt, like, oh my gosh. And then the thoughts come in. They're not used to it not being me. Like, they're used to me being there. And now how is it going to go? And are they going to be, you know, upset and frustrated with how things are going? And it's all my fault because here I am doing this other thing or staying late at work and I'm choosing work over my kids. And oh my gosh. And the swirl starts, right? That is simply your mind sending you the ick because you have behaved in a way that it's not used to. That's all it is. And it's funny because let's go back to some brain science and some evolution. The ick evolved because it was a signal to us that, something is wrong. No, it is dangerous out here. You need to fall back in line and do what's familiar and do what's safe, because that's what's going to keep you alive. We know it's safe inside this familiarity zone, so stay your butt in it. And when you move outside of it, you get the ick. And normally, your mind evaluates the ick as though something is wrong. I have done something wrong. So you can see where, I'm going to stick with this example of picking the kids up, getting dinner going, where if you deviate from that, the ick starts and immediately your mind appraises it as though something's wrong and you start to feel like you've done something wrong, even when you haven't, even when you know you deserve a break, even when you know the other 6 days of the week you did it, even though it is not a big deal, it is one day out of, you know, so many days that they're going to have in their life, right? It's this weird thing that our mind does when we step outside of our familiarity zone, even in something small like that. So the guilt can easily creep in just because we've done something out of the ordinary. So I want you to keep that in mind. It's not going to stop the ick from happening, P.S. Like, you know, if you are prone to this and any of this is resonating, the next time you don't pick your kids up and you don't start dinner, keep going with the same example, you're still going to feel the ick. So don't be like, April, you were wrong. You didn't take it away. I can't take that away from you. I can't make your mind stop functioning. But what I hope it does is it gives you a tool to say, you know what? I know I feel guilty right now, but I'm not actually doing anything wrong. This guilt is just a signal that my mind is sending me saying that I've done something different than what it's used to. And that's okay. And I'm okay being here. The ick, in this case, is not signaling that anything is wrong. Nothing about the situation is wrong. I haven't done anything wrong. And that self-talk doesn't stop the ick from happening, but it dilutes it out. It makes it less biting. It has less of an effect. You're less likely to get hooked by it. So try that next time. you're in a situation where maybe you need a break or you're doing something different or you're trading responsibilities with your significant other, try talking to yourself in that way and recognizing the ick as not something that is threatening. P.S., the biggest time I see this happening is when if a parent stays home on leave when the child is either born or after an adoption or the child joins family. There are habits we get into. There are familiarity zones that we craft during that, call it maternity leave or paternity leave, during that leave time that work for the way that the family is operating during that leave time. But all that changes if you go back to work. And so I see people bearing this incredible amount of guilt when they go back to work because they feel like they've done something wrong. Same rules apply. Your mind is used to you doing one thing because you drew the boundaries of that familiarity zone during your leave. And now you're simply doing something else. Your mind is responding in the way that minds do. It's sending you anxiety and sending you guilt because it doesn't like that you're acting in a way that it didn't, you know, anticipate or predict. And it doesn't mean you've done anything wrong. You haven't done anything wrong. Okay, so that was the first concept that I wanted to talk about, this idea of a quote-unquote comfort zone, but better named a familiarity zone. The second one is one that I guarantee you have heard about, and that is the concept of cognitive dissonance. So let's do some definitions. Cognitive dissonance is when we behave in a way that is contrary to something that our mind holds to be true. Now, in psychology, when we say something our mind holds to be true, that's just, it's a belief. Beliefs can be true. They can be objectively true, but they aren't necessarily objectively true. That's a conversation for another day. Just sort of file that away as things April said, and I'm probably going to come back to it in a future episode. But cognitive dissonance is, hey, there is something that I know to be true, and I'm behaving in a way that feels contrary to it. Cognitive dissonance is another time when our mind relies on our beliefs or relies on those things that it quote unquote knows to be true to predict what's going to happen, including our own behavior. And when there's an incongruence there, our mind doesn't like it. And again, it sends us anxiety and it sends us guilt and it just goes into its whole swirl. So again, what does this have to do with parenting? Let's talk about the most fundamental belief or thing our mind knows to be true about parenting. You love your kids. You love them. You love them. Can you think of another human being that you love more than your kids? I literally can't. I mean, I love my spouse. I love my husband. But I love my kids. Funny side note, there was a goose in my backyard the other day that like hissed at my kid and like this mama bear like roared out of my body. I was like, no way, dude, not today, not in this backyard, not this kid. There is this just instinctual love that we have for our kids that is so deep and so powerful. So our mind knows that to be true. We love our kids. Now, I'm going to go back to a situation where, let's say you have been with them for a bunch of days, you need a break, and ultimately you take a break. Say you, again, maybe you get a babysitter, maybe grandma or grandpa picks them up, aunt, uncle, somebody, whatever. Somebody else has them, and you're not with them. And the guilt sets in. Sometimes the mere act of asking to be away from your kids can feel incongruent to the belief that you love them. In your mind, what it's saying subconsciously is, don't you love them? Why wouldn't you want to be with them? If you loved them, you would want to be with them. Now, we know in our rational mind, like, that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying I don't love them. I'm saying I just need a stinking break, right? But your mind doesn't operate in a sophisticated way like that. It's like operating on these very simplistic if-then rules in a lot of cases. And here's one of them: in this sense of cognitive dissonance, if you love someone, you want to spend time with them and you enjoy it. This also can come into play when, let's say, you've been with your kids, you're hanging out with them all day, they want to play the 19th game of make-believe or some other kid game, and you're kind of burnt out and you need to do something like adult for a little while. You want to talk to another adult, or maybe you want to listen to a podcast or do something that's a little more stimulating than playing dolls or, you know, building something. The guilt can set in there because it's like, if you love them, don't you want to spend that time with them? And you can see again where this is sort of a rule of thumb that our mind operates off of. And it sends you, when you break that rule, it sends you the ick, and you interpret the ick as though you've done something wrong. We feel guilty when we do something wrong. So the guilt comes in this unnecessary way, because we appraise the ick as more than it is. So I want to give an example that I give during my speaking engagements sometimes, and I think it's a really helpful one, and it kind of sums up both of these points. And this is what I was talking about earlier, something I just want you to keep in mind the next time. Here's a new way of operating and a new way of engaging and being in relationship with the ick that I hope will help. It tends to help people. I want to talk about three organs in your body. I want to talk about your heart, I want to talk about your stomach, and I want to talk about your mind. We're going to talk about what it looks like to put stress on each of those three organs. So let's say you put stress on your heart. You go run a 5K. What is your heart going to do? It's going to beat fast, right? It beats fast. That's what hearts do when you put them under stress. Do you identify with that heartbeat? Do you say, I'm beating fast? No, you say, my heart is beating fast. You don't get too wrapped up in it. It just is what it is, right? Even though if something is actually wrong, like let's say you went into AFib or some kind of, you know, like actual cardiac event, your heart might be racing. But you don't, after you've run a 5K, you don't take that to mean, oh my gosh, I'm having a cardiac event, something's wrong. We sort of de-identify with it and just say, oh, that's just what your heart does when it's under stress. Similarly, your stomach. Let's say you don't eat for about 8 hours. What's your stomach going to do? It's going to growl, right? It's going to growl and it might hurt. Do you identify with that? Do you get super nervous and wrapped up and freaked out that something's wrong? Even though that growling and that pain could be an indicator that you are starving to death. We don't do that. No, no, no. I just haven't eaten for 8 hours. I need to eat something. This is fine, right? We don't identify with it and let it sort of take us down a spiral. Your mind. When you put your mind under stress, meaning you do something, in this case, this is just one example, but you do something that it is not expecting. You break the rules, you step out of your familiarity zone, you act in a way that's incongruent with your beliefs, cognitive dissonance. Your mind doesn't like it. It puts it under stress. What do minds do when they're under stress? They send you anxiety and they send you negative emotion. That's it. Just like stomachs growl, just like hearts beat fast, your mind sends anxiety and sends negative emotion. That's just what they do. But unlike our stomach and our heart, we get wrapped up in our mind because that anxiety and that negative emotion happens in our own voice in our head a lot of times. So the next time you're feeling that guilt rise up simply because you took a break or you exchanged responsibilities with someone or whatever else causes you parental guilt, I want you to take just a second to stop and say, can I treat this as though my stomach's growling? Can I treat this as though my heart is beating fast after a race or after a run or a workout? Can I de-identify with this anxiety and this negative emotion, even if you can do it for just a second? This is a skill, so you'll get better at it over time. But can I just de-identify with it a little bit and realize yes, I'm feeling the sense of guilt, but nothing's actually wrong. I haven't done anything wrong. And go back to talking to yourself in that more rational way and helping yourself through the situation, because your mind is very powerful, but it's just not that sophisticated, right? I didn't know what to expect. I don't like that. So here's some anxiety. Here's some guilt. I hope this was helpful. It definitely helped me think about my own situation with my kids and how I tend to feel when I sort of break the rhythm of how things typically go in my family. And it has really helped me think about things differently since I had this conversation with my friend. So I wanted to share that with you guys on this episode, just you and I sitting here chatting about psychology, because I hope it helps so many of you out there who are parents who probably experience guilt like I do from time to time. All right, friends, stick with me for just a couple of minutes. I want to talk about a few cool resources that we have for you that'll just take this a little bit deeper. Hang out for 1 minute and I'll be right back. All right, let's wrap this up. Couple of resources for you guys. The first two are all in the realm of self-care. If there's one thing that parents need more than anything else, or just people of high responsibility, whether that responsibility is to a child or really anything else, if you're a person who has a lot on your plate, self-care is an absolute necessity. I have two resources for you. The first one is absolutely free. You might remember that a while back, Peak Mind partnered with the Heart Mind Institute and Wisdom for Life for the Best Year of Your Life Summit. It was an awesome 10-day summit. Some of the most, well-known, sought-after visionaries in the world participated in it. We're doing it again, but in a slightly different way. So we're partnering with the HeartMind Institute for a summit that is coming up in mid-May. So depending upon when you're hearing this, it may or may not be too late. So if you hear this around the time that it comes out, get on it and sign up. It is the self-care summit, and it's absolutely free. It's a week long, and we're talking to incredible people. I'm just going to give you a few of the people that I'm interviewing. Sharon Salzberg was one of the partners with Jack Kornfield, who is credited with bringing meditation to the United States. Like, she is a huge name in the field of meditation and mindfulness, and it's like nearly impossible to get to study with her. So if you sign up for the Self-Care Summit by clicking the link below in this episode description, you can hear directly from her. I actually get to interview her tomorrow. I'm so excited. I interviewed her for Best Year of Your Life, and she was outstanding. Second, Renee Trudeau. Oh my gosh, you hear from her and it feels like you have been given the biggest hug. She has one of the best ways of characterizing self-care that I've ever heard. She's going to be part of the summit. Another amazing person that I've interviewed, Brett Cotter. He has this incredible, powerful technique for dealing with trauma and stress and anxiety, and he teaches it on the session. It's so awesome. So those are just three people. There are dozens who are part of this 7-day summit, and it is absolutely free. So again, that link is listed in the episode description below. You can sign up for free, and I can't wait to see you there. Second self-care resource for you. Our most popular course is a course called Self-Care by Design. We use a life design approach to create a guilt-free, effective, customized self-care routine that you can use to support yourself in showing up as your best every single day. So that course is $29. It is one of the most accessible, popular courses we have, and I've linked it below in case that's something you're interested in. And finally, Dr. Ashley wrote an incredible blog called 6 Steps for Dealing with Overwhelm. And if there is something that I think we all need right now, it is that. So I linked that blog post below as well, because I know that it's something that I have referred back to, and it's something that I think a lot of you can probably use. So take us up on those three resources, tons of free stuff for you. As always, we want to support you in showing up as your best. And finally, let's remember that time is the most non-renewable resource on the planet, and I'm grateful to each and every one of you who chose to spend some of your precious time with me today. I'm Dr. April Seifert, and I'll see you next week.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.